We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, RotoViz listeners? It's Colin Kelly here, executive producer of RotoViz Radio and one of the co-hosts of the RotoViz Overtime podcast. I just wanted to drop by and say thank you, as always, for listening into another RotoViz Radio production. As a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% off a RotoViz NFL pass right now at rotoviz.com/podcast or by simply adding the code RVRadio2021 at checkout. That'll get you access to all of the content and tools on the RotoViz website, the best tools and content in the business for the best listeners in the business. As always, we do appreciate you listening to each and every show. And if you do have 5, 10, 15 seconds to spare, please drop a rating for today's show on your favorite podcast app. It is much appreciated. With all that said, thank you once again for tuning in. I hope you have a great day. Now let's get back to the show.
Breaks a tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College to Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May. You can find me on Twitter at FF_TravisM and Titan Travis on Clubhouse. If you're joining us for the first time, College to Canton is a show about the journey of the best college football players and prospects from being a college football recruit all the way to their journey along the way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We always talk about some fantasy football, since this is a RotoViz radio podcast, but we always make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And so last week, we held the NFL 2021 rookie mock draft with Matt Wisbey and Stefan Lecoe of the RotoViz team here to help build a quick rookie big board through 24 picks for you all. But this week, with many rookie drafts already underway or even completed at this point, we want to dig a bit further and look at some real rookie draft data and what the masses believe to be the appropriate ranks for all these incoming rookies to the NFL. To get an idea of where players are currently being valued for fantasy football, so you can either A, win your rookie drafts, or B, learn how to take advantage of value gaps in consensus and your own rookie values to help you add all your favorite incoming rookies to your team. And to help me dive into this subject and tackle rookie draft season, I'm joined by John Bosch at John Bosch FF on Twitter and Matt Price at Matt Price FF on Twitter. And I love you guys keeping that nice and neat, same format on the handles for me. That makes
really
it easy.
Creative.
Yeah, super creative, guys. I appreciate it. Mine's just about as creative as well. But they both help bring the Dynasty Game Night podcast to life. And, you know, basically a fun mix of game show and Dynasty Fantasy Football analysis. John also hosts the Dynasty Wall Street podcast and some really fun, strange fantasy football leagues that we can we can get into. Matt is a Dynasty League football senior writer and podcaster and hosts the Zookeeper Stories podcast because he is an actual real-life zookeeper. So how we doing, gents?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be here. I'm excited to talk about this rookie poll mock that you do. You know, it's one of my favorite things that you do a couple of times a year.
Yeah.
It's fun to see where the community lies and how it kind of stacks up. It's not really ADP, but it takes a pretty good consensus of at least what the Twitter world is thinking. So it's always fun to watch the results of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And John and I are probably, I wouldn't say we're the farthest away from consensus, but you know, I would say we are definitely in general not consensus. So it'll be fun to have a conversation about this.
Exactly. I do believe we share the same 101, actually, Matt. I'm pretty sure. Just based on the auctions I've seen us in against each other and stuff like that, in drafts, I think we share the same 101. And it does not match the poll.
Yeah, and I wanted to have you guys on because I know you guys don't always see things through the same lens as the consensus does with these incoming rookies. Just in general, I really respect both your opinions when it comes to fantasy football and player values and kind of how you look at things, and really have appreciated just the conversations over the years and the goofy games I've joined. I think the last time I was actually on a show with both of you, it was actually probably on a Dynasty game night. And Matt, it's been a bit since I was on a show with you, but I think it was like me, you, and maybe Bobby Koch, and we were like talking about, we were comping some players to zoo animals, and I think I made the comp, I called Philip Rivers, he's like a crocodile or an alligator, because like if you pictured like what an alligator would look like throwing a football, that's Philip Rivers' release, and so that's... That might have been the last time.
That might have
time.
Been Zookeeper Stories. That might have been, which that is now defunct. But yeah, I think
that might have been Super Flex.
I'm sorry, G. Yeah. Not Zookeeper Stories. Super Flex is what I meant.
Nah, that's what it was. Also doesn't exist anymore. That's what it was. But
couple
it's
a couple
of
extinct podcasts.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's fun to have you guys on the show. And just want to dive into it. So listeners, we'll get to the rookie poll mock discussion here. If you're not familiar, it is something I do a couple times each year, once typically in January and then once after the NFL draft, just to kind of gauge the consensus values of rookies incoming to a given class. And so I basically set it up as a Twitter format poll mock going down the list. And it's been fun because I've seen the community get better and better each and every single year at actually predicting where these players will be valued, you know, several months in advance. And so it's cool to see that happen, but I'm sure we're going to have some differing values between myself and Matt and John and the community as a whole. But just to kick it off, to kind of frame where we're going in terms of player value discussion today, who's one rookie, John, who you're finding yourself higher on than most in this rookie class? And I think I already know the answer here.
I will say I'm not higher than most people based on what I've been seeing, because it's been very tough for me to get him. So I think you want me to say Kyle Pitts.
I do.
I mean, he is my 101, and I don't think that's, honestly, I don't think it's that much higher than the consensus at this point. I mean, there are a lot of people that have him 101. I argued with you, Travis, that he should have even been included in this, and he wasn't originally when you put up the first poll. And I'm like, where's the real 101? It should be Kyle Pitts. I mean, obviously, if anybody's been following me on Twitter all over the last couple of weeks, I have been, probably months, I guess, at this point. I've been slowly kind of rolling out this whole, like, argument for why I think he's the 101.
Yeah.
I do know that originally people thought I was nuts because you can't take a tight end 101. That's just dumb.
I mean, I still think you're nuts, but continue.
But then it started to really, like, that kind of picked up steam, and like other people were saying the same thing. And I'm like, holy crap, like maybe I'm not crazy for this. And then I just started looking for like more and more and more, like just how valuable can he end up being? And I mean, I've talked with Matt, and I have talked about this at length as well, that the sky is the limit for this kid just because of the positional scarcity at tight end. I mean, you can find running back, you can find wide receiver elsewhere. It is really tough to find tight end. And this kid is 20 years old. 20. Like, I mean, it's a big swing to take a tight end 101, like you've said, Travis, many times. But oh my God, if you connect with that pitch, like that's, I think he could reach value heights like we have never seen before. He's already the tight end one for a lot of people. I mean, it's tough to trade any other tight end for him right now, 1-1.
Yeah.
I know I'm waiting for him to be won in an auction so that I can offer George Kittle directly for him. And I already know it's going to get rejected.
Yeah, so, it is insane. Like looking
it's crazy
at what what Kyle Pitts has become. I mean, just analytically coming in to this draft season, we knew he was going to be a freak athletically, and we already understood that his peak production was incredible at Florida. You know, rounding out with taking up like 30% of their offense through the air last year as a tight end, it's just really double what you need for a typical tight end breakout threshold, I guess. And so, checking a bunch of boxes before he even came in, and then, coming in with like a 99th percentile speed score, 99th percentile freak score, all these fun athletic measurables going on as well. And then he gets taken in the NFL draft earlier than any other tight end in NFL history. So, yes, it is insane just to see this hype train go beyond off the rails, like off the rails, down a cliff, into like this chasm and through like to the other side of the world. Like it's crazy to see what's been going on. I joked with
Bob Gilchrist, who does the Dynasty Time Machine with me, when he put out a graphic where like he showed Kyle Pitts's value and it like was a straight line upwards. And I said, like, is he talented enough? Is he truly Superman, where he could actually like reverse time and that value could like do, can it do a loop? I mean, at some point, like, does he start going left on a value chart? Can he actually do that?
Can he break?
Obviously, that's an exaggeration, but I mean, like,
yeah.
Can he create a new dimension? Break the system?
Like, yeah,
it is his value has skyrocketed. Yeah, I mean, and not only did he go early to Atlanta uses tight ends.
They do. Like,
they made Austin Hooper really relevant.
Well, I think one thing that, I mean, I don't know how many people have been talking about this. I don't think I've heard very many people talking about this, but what if we're hung up by the designation as a tight end? And what if he is just actually going to be used as a receiver? You know, there's plenty of targets to go around, especially if Julio takes off. Matt Ryan led the league last season in pass attempts with 626, 608 or more each of the last three seasons. 197 targets went to Hayden Hurst and Russell Gage last year. I know that was with Julio missing seven games, but even if Julio plays the full season and stays in Atlanta, you have to imagine there's 100 plus targets for him there in his rookie season. So,
oh my God, I think it's 100 targets. Oh my God.
Which I know doesn't sound like that much when we're talking about receivers, but for tight ends, that would be third or fourth, I think. Last year, I think Kelsey got like 145, and then Ingram got like 95 or something like that. So it's right up there, the upper echelon of tight ends as a rookie. So I think that's one of the things that have been overlooked. And then the other thing is that we have rookie running backs and wide receivers that come in every single year, almost every single year, that are pretty good, good to great almost every single year. We don't get this kind of tight end prospect ever, right? I mean, you can say we go back to the year with Evan Ingram and those, but even then we were talking about them at the maximum, at the mid to late first round. We were never getting them up into the top three or four picks. So I just think, maybe it's FOMO, call it whatever you want, but, and I'm not saying he's my 101. He is in the top tier with Jamar Chase. If you want to make Chase your 101, fine, I don't care. But I just, I'm not willing to miss out if I have the ability to take that. And if I miss, and because I didn't take a running back or wide receiver, I bet you I can probably take a running back or wide receiver next year, especially we're talking about wide receiver, because you can go 40, 50 deep in terms of starters and dynasty at that position and feel pretty comfortable with what you're throwing out each week. So those are the main reasons why I'm in on Pitts as, the 101 if you want to put him there, but, at least the 102 or 103.
Well, it sounds like you guys have the same answer, and you guys aren't
different way. I just wanted to chime in there because I like talking about Kyle Pitts.
Oh, dude, yes. I love it, though, because that's the guy, that's the man of the hour. That is what everyone is talking about and talking about his ceiling. And it will be interesting to see if Julio is either gone or if he's back and he stays healthy. Like, what does that do to his target share? Just because, yes, Hayden Hurst is still there. Only for probably another year, but he did have 90 targets at the tight end position. They're bringing in, and I already talked about this, but the new coach from the Titans last year, used tight ends more than anyone else in the country. anyone else in the league, rather, running 12 personnel almost half the time. So I could see them rolling out Hayden Hurst and rolling out Kyle Pitts both on the same field at the same time and utilizing Hayden Hurst as, you know, maybe more of a blocker rather than Kyle Pitts, because Kyle Pitts, I've seen it best described as he loses slowly, which is as a blocker. So I think it would, his best role, his best fit would just be, just, hey, line him up at X wide receiver, like you said, Matt. Yeah. Line him up at big slot and just call it a day. That's what Travis Kelce does anyway. I think we all like Kyle Pitts. I'm just not in the, 1.01.
You just can't do it.
Get him all the way there.
It just seems like all of the analysis is based on that designation as a tight end. You know, like, tight ends don't do it. They don't do it year one. They just can't do it. It's going to take three years. But what if they get wide receiver targets? What if they're used as an actual wide receiver? So, like, that barrier is something that, I don't know, it just seems like people aren't willing to get across when they apply all the analytics or whatever. You know, that's the thing. We're talking about the tight end position because it says tight end next to his name. But we see all across the positions, we see variations in what different – we can't say that a wide receiver is a wide receiver. We can't say a running back is a running back because they all do different things in today's NFL. You know, a slot receiver, you don't compare to an X receiver. They just do different things. They're different players. So maybe Kyle Pitts is the first – tight end that we want to say is maybe not necessarily a tight end, you know?
Yeah.
Jimmy Graham in his early usage, you know, something like that. You have to see that that Kyle Pitts is going to be in a Jimmy Graham situation where he's going to be arguing for wide receiver money from that position, right? I mean, if he hits, obviously. If he doesn't hit, that's not going
to
be an argument.
I was trying to remember that did that. I was just thinking about that, Matt. When he comes to his contract, he is going to say, look, hey, they're using me as a wide receiver. I want wide receiver money. I want wide receiver franchise tag, not tight end franchise tag.
Yeah.
It's not just his ceiling. I mean, his ceiling is he doesn't have one, honestly. He does not have a ceiling from a value perspective. But his floor is also ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because I know everybody says you're going to buy him cheaper after his rookie year. No, you're not.
I am totally open to this falling on our face in this. Like, that could absolutely happen. Like, I'm not saying that's not out of the realm of possibility. I'm saying that the risk of missing out to me is a lot higher than it is if I was to take a different player and miss on them. You know what I mean? So
it's really hard for me to believe that he drops down the tight end ranks between now and next year. I don't see any way that he is not within the top tier of tight ends next year.
He's already.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think he can really drop.
I think he can
only go up.
And there's probably probably three or four running backs or wide receivers that are worth more than him in fantasy football after next year. I think he's still the tight end, top three tight end, and it doesn't matter from a value perspective because there are probably two or three or four running backs and wide receivers that are worth more than he is in fantasy football formats. That's my thing. Yeah. That's why I can't get over
In Dynasty, though, Travis, there's an argument that he could be more valuable than any of those running backs and wide receivers.
It's just never happened in the history of
because you can line him up
ever.
In your tight end slot, which is
the ultimate cheat code, going back to Marcus Colson, right? We know that is the ultimate cheat code.
Travis Kelce, look how many championship teams Travis Kelce has.
Oh man, he's carried so many bad
teams.
Like so many, like I've had like mediocre teams, but then like they're in the championship game every year because of Travis Kelce. But the assumption is that we are probably all getting ourselves in a little bit of trouble in terms of actual production is that like, that's cool to like just say he's going to be Travis Kelce for the next 6-7 years, but like still has to actually happen.
We're assuming. Yeah. It's hard to just take that leap.
It's like, hey, you know that guy who's been the best tight end in NFL history for any 5-year stretch? Yeah. This guy's automatically him. And that's just, I don't think
he does that as a rookie. Like I'm not on board. I've seen some of these projections for his rookie stats and it makes me drool. Cause I really want it to happen, but I can't get on board expecting that as a rookie. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah.
I think he'll be okay, but that's all he has to be is okay.
If he finishes anywhere from in the top 12 tight ends, he's the 101 in tight end in terms of tight ends next year.
Yeah.
Like I just don't see how that doesn't happen. Like if he completely falls on his face as like a, you know, he's barely startable or gets hurt for the and misses most of the year, then there's a chance for him to lose value. But otherwise, I agree with John.
I think injury insulates him. I think he has to be on the field and like looking like literally like running the wrong patterns and stuff like that. Like he has to be lost because it's Gronk finished as like a top 10 tight end last year. It'd be really,
it's a low bar to be a tight end one.
It is a very low bar.
But anyway, moving on. We can make this just a Kyle Pitts show, but
let's move. I was talking about somebody else. Do you want me to throw out another one?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
My next one that I would say that I think I'm higher on than most people is Rondale Moore. I just feel like that is the perfect, like I'm a Packer fan. So if he couldn't go to the Packers and Aaron Rodgers is also came back, like if he couldn't go there, I think Arizona is like the perfect landing spot for this guy, the horizontal offense. I just can't wait to see, you know, the little quarterback and the little wide receiver out there playing that horizontal passing game. And I think he's going to be a PPR cheat code. I think he's going to take the slot role from Kirk right away. So, I mean, I feel like I would have him up with the, like, you know, around the dot where people have Devontae Smith in that kind of range. So I guess that's my higher on than other people.
Way higher than consensus. But, you know, I love Rondale Moore as well. I'm a little bit lower on him than some of the other RotoViz guys. They have him around where you said, like near Devontae Smith, but even higher in a couple of instances. But for me, I think it's just, I think even myself as a Purdue alumni, I have to look at his height and look at the bend that he sits in and the maybe slight injury concerns, I guess, with his weird hyperextension and prolonged issue there and then re-entering last fall. Like there are some red flags, I guess, if you want to call them that. But I mean, he could have just sat out after his freshman year and just still gotten day two capital. He was just so much better than everyone else in pretty much the entirety of the Big Ten, at the very least, as a true freshman. I mean, he was called the most versatile player in all of college football. He won the award for that, the Paul Hornung Award, as a true freshman, having 2,200 plus all-purpose yards and the perfect, you know, 30%+ breakout rate in terms of his dominator rating. His yards per team pass attempt were way above what you typically see from a true freshman as well. Analytically speaking, he was ready to go at age 18. And now he's in an offense with a great offensive coordinator that's going to use him well. I think I was really worried that he was going to go somewhere and be stuck in an offense that was not creative and that was not going to use him well enough. And I think this is a system that's going to take advantage of him. Plus, I want to see all the records of like Kyler Murray, 5'9" or 5'10" to Moore, 5'7".
I cannot wait.
Yes.
Smallest touchdown combination ever in NFL history.
Ever. It's happening. So I love that. So I love that pick, Matt, especially because I'm a homer with my Boilermakers. But for me, it's actually Elijah Moore, like the other Moore. So just keeping it right there. The only time he didn't absolutely blow it out of the water from a production standpoint was when he was having to sit behind A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf. Even in his second season, though, he absolutely blew it up as more of a slot functional guy in this weird system where they had this run first quarterback and then they'd bring in Matt Corral for a little while and then they'd go back to John Rhys Plumlee. And then Lane Kiffin came in and was like, hey, this guy's an NFL player. We should just shove 10.5 touches per game his way. And he absolutely dominated the SEC last year, was the best wide receiver in the SEC last year by several measures. And then he comes in and gets top 40 NFL draft capital, going to a system where they're trying to put weapons around a young quarterback, and he's going to get peppered a lot early. And all, with all due respect to Corey Davis, he's not an alpha wide receiver. He just isn't. Like I saw him try to be and fail miserably for 4 years at Tennessee. So Elijah Moore, that is his team by year two, if not halfway through his rookie season. Are you guys high on Elijah Moore as well?
I am, but it's a really hard, I know it's a different coaching staff. I know it's a different quarterback. I know all that stuff, but it's so hard to like get over that mental barrier that he's playing for the Jets. And also I'm not a fan of Zach Wilson in general. So I just, you would know better than me on this, Travis, but it just feels like from the little bit I've watched of Zach Wilson, that their skill sets don't really mesh that well. He's somebody that wants to take the big shots downfield. I don't think he really sees the field super well I remember against Houston specifically, there was a play where Wilson threw it into threw it into coverage. I think it was a flea flicker actually, and there was the slot receiver was sitting wide open in the end zone. He decided to throw it into coverage instead. So I guess it just depends on if they're able to get Wilson under control and how that affects him. To me, like, it seems like if he wants to just go deep with the ball, it seems like he messes a little bit more with Denzel Mims. People seem down on Denzel Mims too because of this of drafting Elijah Moore. So I love the player. It's hard for me to get excited about the fit, I guess.
Yeah, it does feel weird getting excited about a Jets wide receiver, and I don't want to hate on them because I've critiqued the idea of a landing spot just off on for a while. But Elijah Moore did kind of show that he could win as an outside wide receiver and a deep threat more so last year. In 2019, though, yeah, if he was in just a slot role or just an underneath role or just a role that typically wasn't peppered by Zach Wilson, I would be a little bit more worried. But I was not worried about Elijah Moore's landing spot as much because of his proven versatility in his final season. Sure. But yeah, the landing spot, it just does feel weird, just projecting huge success in a situation that has kind of killed recent opportunities. But I am still, and that's partly, I think we've seen that in how the consensus and market views Elijah Moore. He is lower than his capital and his production profile should probably dictate. So I'm going to end up with a lot of Elijah Moore this year, and I already have. So I'm excited to see what happens there. But on the flip side, before we dive into the rookie mock results and where you guys differ along the lines there, what's somebody you're basically going to come away with zero of in your rookie drafts this year? We'll start with you, Matt, this time.
There's probably two. One of them is the one you mentioned, so I'll save him for you to talk about.
Sure.
I will say before you get to him that I do have some FOMO with him, like, because I missed out on AJ Brown for a similar reason, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, my guy is Kadarius Toney, and I'm coming around a little bit. I've been talking to Paul Perdikizi over Saturday to Sunday, and you know, he's convinced me a little bit that, you know, don't get so concerned with the fact that the wide receiver depth chart is kind of a cluster. They have a whole bunch of wide receiver twos and Kenny Golladay, right? And don't get too frustrated with the Jason Garrett as the play caller, because he probably is going to be gone in a year. And entering 2022, maybe Toney is the legit wide receiver two there. It's him and Golladay, and we're ready to go, right? But just from watching him, he just seems like a player who plays out of control. Like, he moves too fast for his body. You know, you see all the slips, you see the drops, you see the lack of production. But then, you know, Paul was saying stuff, but there's reasons why he didn't have the production. And so I feel like I've been way too low on him in general, but I still don't think I'm going to have any of him, because I'm so much more lower on him. And I shouldn't be based on draft capital, but that's just kind of the way I feel. And I have a little bit of take lock, I guess, with Toney.
No, I can't get there myself either. Although I did just draft him yesterday in a league, because it's a stupid deep league where we drafted 100 rounds of college players last year. And somehow Toney was not drafted. And so, like, I had like the 1.04 in our rookie draft, which is like just empty at this point, as you can imagine, drafting 100 rounds of college players. Right. But I drafted him because, like, guys that went ahead of him were two linebackers, because it's IDP, because I'm a super nerd, like Zaven Collins and Jamin Davis, and then Dwayne Eskridge. And then the best player available was Kadarius Toney after that. And then, like, quickly dropped off to like day three running backs.
And, like, I'd take him over Eskridge for sure.
Oh, and I was surprised. I was like, I'm going to have to take Toney here just off of draft capital. And I feel disgusting. Yeah. Even though, yes, there's some context. He was a converted quarterback as athlete designation as a recruit. And then came in and was this utility player. Where do we even plug him in? And it took him till like basically last year to finally garner any significant receiving yard market share, because they just didn't know where to even put him. But kind of finally blew up and, you know, took 22% of the receiving yards and when he was in the games. But that's still not even a great analytical profile in his peak year. So it goes against everything I believe in to draft Kadarius Toney. But even I drafted one. John, are you for or against Toney? Or are you just like, hey, he got the capital, I don't care?
I do love draft capital. I believe that the NFL teams are telling us important things when they spend draft capital and when they spend money.
They got a ride with Henry Ruggs, right? They definitely got a ride drafting Henry Ruggs as the first wide receiver.
So you didn't let me finish. I still am not on board with Toney. I mean, like, I'll eventually take him,
Yeah.
Because, like, eventually it makes sense to take him. But, yeah, I'm probably going to end up with a really small amount of Kadarius Toney because other people always seem to take him a little bit before me, which is fine. Yeah. Like, I'm not going out of my way to get him.
Yeah.
The guy that I'm going to end up with probably none of, I play mostly super flex. It's Zach Wilson. And we already mentioned it. And yeah. Travis, you said you did not want to pile on. I will pile on. They are the Jets. Look, they're a new coaching staff. Yes. I know. They were a new coaching staff a couple of years ago. They were a new coaching staff a couple of years before that. Like, to me, it's not just a coaching staff thing. It's a straight up organization is bad. They didn't change the organization yet. So I'm not going to trust any Jet player until they prove me wrong. When was the last Jet that you saw get drafted and had any fantasy relevance? I mean, like, it's been a very long time since they've had fantasy relevant anything, like quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. Like,
Jamison Crowder, come on.
Yeah, Jamison Crowder, actually, was he
a Jet draft pick?
Okay, no, he wasn't. He wasn't.
That's fair.
Okay, he wasn't a draft pick. That's what I'm saying. Did he come from Washington or something like that?
Yeah.
So, like, they don't know what they're doing as an organization. So I know they can keep changing the people that are coaching these players and the people that are bringing in these players. But until there's a Jet player that proves that, okay, they've turned it around, I'm definitely going to end up with no Zach Wilson. Yeah. I also have Elijah Moore, unfortunately. Sorry, Travis. But I do have a little bit of him already just because, like, just like Toney, like, well, okay, this makes sense. I'm going to take Elijah Moore before I take Toney, and I'm sitting here and they're both on the board. But Zach Wilson, I will make sure that I'm just not going to invest. That's kind of somebody will trade up for Zach Wilson in Superflex. I will gladly trade out.
I'll just take Jamar Chase or whatever running back, you know, like, I don't need to take Zach Wilson. Either I'm going to get one of the three quarterbacks, or it's fine. I don't need to take Wilson. I'll take the top prospect at another position.
Yeah. I mean, like, Zach Wilson's my 109 in Superflex. Like, he's the last player that has some sort of value, and I'm still not even taking him at 109. Like, if all the other quarterbacks, running backs, and wide receivers that I want are gone, and tight end are gone, then I'm trying.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I'm trying to find anybody that'll trade up. Give me a first next year, and I'll give you Zach Wilson. Feel free.
Yeah, and for those that don't play in weird leagues like me, or even Superflex, like, it feels weird to talk about a quarterback even in the same breath of these guys. But I guess at this point, as I'm realizing, more and more people are playing Superflex. But Zach Wilson, even in one quarterback leagues, I'm finding myself not really coming away with him because I want somebody else that has greater upside way later in the draft. And he just is the guy that keeps dropping. And we can loop back to him a little bit once we get to his point in the rookie consensus mock, but we'll do that on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now. With Roman, you get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S.-licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication's appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/RotoViz now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. GetRoman.com/RotoViz. Get started now to save $15 on your first month of treatment.
And we're back. So just we're going to dive right into it because we've been talking about players we're going to want to have a bunch of, players we're not going to have very much of, but we're going to dive into the 2021 Rookie Poll Mock Twitter results and see what you guys and what many people thought the consensus should be on these rookie rankings. Just to recap, we actually had just shy of 12,000 votes that went into this poll, the series of polls that got down through the first two rounds, or 24 picks of rookies. And I do have some votes on a few other players outside of that as well that didn't quite make the cut. But let's start off at the very top. And I've used this tier break percentage every single year. But basically, for the Twitter polls, if any one player won a poll by more than 20%, that's typically where we've seen the tier breaks happen. Except this year, there were some pretty crazy hard tier breaks, more than I have ever seen. It just seems like there's this odd general consensus across the board. I mean, not everyone agrees, and there are some John Boshes, and there are some Matt Prices that think a little bit differently, but it seems there's a lot of agreement, especially within the first eight picks or so this year, and especially when it comes to Najee Harris and Ja'Marr Chase at 1.01 and 1.02, the first and second overall rookies in one quarterback formats. Seems like there's almost a virtual tie right there between Najee Harris and Ja'Marr Chase, which is interesting to me because I think Ja'Marr Chase is a step above, clear step above Najee Harris, even with the landing spot, because Harris comes into the worst offensive line situation perhaps in the entire league. Yes, he's going to get all the volume, and so that's the opportunity. And most of this game that we play in fantasy football is opportunity, but still long term, especially for dynasty fantasy football leagues, still feels like Chase is the best bet long term. So are you guys on the same page there? Like, do you have Najee Harris even close, or is he a tier down for you?
He's not even my running back one in the class, so he belongs. You could shift Pitts up once in these results into the top tier and move Harris down to where ETN is and move ETN up to 103 if you wanted to think about it that way. Because like you said, you know, I think the play with Harris is if you want to draft Harris, it has to be because you think he's going to get enough volume in year one that his value is going to rise, and then you can flip him for year two. Because after 2021, you know, what are we looking at? Maybe the offensive line gets a little bit better, but the quarterback's probably going to be worse. So while ETN has to deal with James Robinson potentially for 1 year, I'm not buying into anything that Urban Meyer says about them drafting ETN as a third down back at the end of the first round, right? So maybe he has to deal with a little bit of James Robinson year one, but long term, you have to like that situation far better than Najee Harris. So unless you're looking to flip, I think ETN is the pick over Harris at running back.
Yeah, it is interesting because like Najee Harris won. I mean, the options that we actually settled on for the official poll, because John made me do it, he actually changed the top four who were up for voting after some conversations and some redoing of some polls within. We basically landed on the top four, likely being Najee Harris, by consensus anyway, Najee Harris, Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts, and Travis Etienne. Harris took 42% of the vote. And there were 818 votes on this particular poll, by the way. Ja'Marr Chase took down 39%. So only a difference of 3% there. And then all the way down at 16% was Kyle Pitts. And Travis Etienne, your running back one, Matt, only pulled 3% of the vote. It was just interesting to see how sure the consensus seems to be that Najee Harris and Ja'Marr Chase are this step like far away and above. And what was even crazier is that on the 1.02, the second poll, Ja'Marr Chase won 74% of the vote. Second place was still Kyle Pitts at 16%, Travis Etienne at 8%, Devontae Smith at 2%. It was insane that it was just not even close. And we all get hyped up about the wide receiver one in any class, but Ja'Marr Chase, he just feels like more so than ever. I feel like in several other classes, there's at least a conversation to be had about who's the wide receiver one. But it just feels like almost, this year, almost everyone is just like, hey, yeah, it's Chase. Let's check mark, move on, and that's the end of discussion. John, did you feel like that coming into the process, or did you even think about anyone else being wide receiver one?
No, I mean, Chase isn't just the wide receiver one. Like, he's the wide receiver one by – we're going to – and you'll talk about it here as we come up, but – it's a lot of tears. I mean,
yeah,
so it is many. A lot of tears. And even like for me, you know, even though I do have Pitts as my 101, Chase is in that same tier with Pitts. Like, Chase is my 102. And then it goes to the running backs. and then we'll see another receiver. And like there's a tier, the top four are better than number five.
Yeah.
And then number five is like, I want that fifth spot in a draft way more than I want the sixth spot in a draft. I don't want to be sitting at 106. I want 104 and higher. If I really can't get there, then I want 105. And God, if I can't get there, then I guess I have to settle for 106 and 107.
Yeah.
But once we get through this, I mean, like the tiers really did work out. I'm with Matt that I have moved ETN to my running back one. I originally came out of the draft thinking, you know, they're pretty even, like Harris and ETN. I kind of just want to split my exposure to them. If I take ETN in one draft, take Harris in the next one. But as I did drafts and auctions, I found myself wanting to bid more on ETN, a whole lot more. And Matt nailed it. It's because it's not just for this year. I do think Harris will have the better year one, but if I'm investing my rookie draft stock, I want ETN. So he moved through process of auctioning and drafting. ETN became my running back one.
Yeah,
so.
Like when you're on the clock, when it's up to when you got to put the chips down on the table, yep. You got to invest your rookie draft dollars in your auction formats, whatever league you kind of play in. You're like, oh wow, I guess I don't think like this.
Yeah, it makes a difference when you really have to start doing it. And
yeah.
I love that process because it makes you think. I mean, you could try and do mocks as much as we want, and we love the exercises of the mocks. It doesn't match the real thing when you're assigning, oh God, I don't want to screw this one up. I think I'm going to take Travis Etienne because like I don't know. For me, I feel like that's the right pick over Harris right now.
Yeah.
I'm not as worried about James Robinson either. I think James Robinson will be
fine. Sounds like we're all on the same page there. I completely agree. It's like Carlos Hyde. Are we really, what year is it? Like why would we ever be worried about Carlos Hyde eating into his
work? Tim Tebow blocking for Carlos Hyde.
Yeah. Tim Tebow in like an H-back role. Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, seriously, tier two was just Kyle Pitts by himself in this rookie poll mock. And when it came to the third slot, he took down 56% of the vote. Travis Etienne he was like 29%. So he lost again by a mark of 27% victory margin there for Kyle Pitts. So again, kind of in a tier in his own this year. And I think this was really just kind of an apprehension, really like I have for the people like me that voted on this poll or would vote on this poll and say, look, I just can't put a tight end in the same tier as like the 1.01. It's like there's just clearly a bunch of people like that. But even the people like me are like, okay, though, let's put Kyle Pitts up there at least close enough. And I think that's where a lot of people settled in with him. We've already kind of talked about him a lot, but I just found it interesting that there were so many individual tiers up here. Like that's never the case. We have like maybe one running back one and then like three or four players all together. But like it was just back to back to back, tier break, hard tier break again. Up to Travis Etienne at the four slot. He took home 50% of the vote with Javonte Williams, Devontae Smith, and Jalen Waddle all being on that poll. He took half the vote in the second place guy was Javonte Williams and lost by 27% of the vote. So Travis Etienne again creates this third tier, only four players in. So we've got Najee Harris, Ja'Marr Chase, top tier. Then Kyle Pitts in his own tier. Then Travis Etienne in his own tier. And then I want to talk about this guy for a second because you mentioned it, John. You want this fifth slot in one quarterback leagues because value-wise, Javonte Williams is again in his own tier. And now maybe it's because, you know, the wide receiver, there's a lot of debate as to who the wide receiver two is. This is like where the real conversation begins for wide receiver two. And then a bunch of other people are like, I just like running backs. I'm going to go get the running back three. Maybe that's what it was. But Javonte Williams won 61% of the vote for the fifth slot in this rookie poll mock draft. And, you know, the second place person was Devontae Smith, and he had 23% of the vote. So he won by 38% of the vote. I know it's a lot of numbers, but it was not even close. Tier four, Javonte Williams. So kicking over to you first, Matt, on Javonte. Where are you at with him? Like, would you even rank him above Najee Harris?
I don't think I would, just because the opportunity is not probably going to be the same. I definitely see Gordon as more of a threat year one than anyone for the Steelers, you know? So I think that's the main reason. But, you know, Melvin Gordon, he was serviceable last year, but he's not exciting. If Melvin Gordon has an injury early in the season, you can absolutely see Javonte Williams just take that job and run with it. And in that case, you know, I have talked to many people that have him as their running back one. I've seen him go running back one in several drafts too. So for me, he's in the same tier with those next two receivers we're going to get to. Like, once you get to that 5, 6, 7 range, I think you take your favorite flavor there. If you want the running back because of the positional premium, go that way. And if you want one of those next wide receivers, you can go that way. But for me, it's a little bit different with the top five. For me, I want a pick in the top four, or I want a bunch of shots in the late first. So yeah. Javonte Williams, I guess, could have been my answer to that question of players that I probably won't come away with just because I want to be in the top four or trade out of that. But I certainly understand the desire to put him in that as a next spot, and like a kind of a chasm, like you mentioned, between him and the next two guys.
Yeah, and I'm a little biased because I had two very deep Devy fantasy football league shares of him that I got in like round 50 plus last year in one spot, and so it was like, just yep, cha-ching, free money, just sign me up all the way. And so like, he was my running back three early in the process, and then I started seeing people rank him like running back one and running back two. Is like, whoa, what are we doing?
Hold on a second. Back the Javonte truck up.
Oh my gosh. Seriously though, it just felt like it was going a little too far. John, though, what for you, once you makes you want to get into pick five? Like, is there just a clear drop? Do you just not care about the next tier of wide receivers as much?
So we talked about the drop from Chase to the next wide receiver. This is the reason that Javonte is the lock at 105 for me, because the drop from him to the next running back,
yes,
is exactly so big. Like, if you don't get Javonte Williams,
you're
taking a shot.
Guess I'm done.
You're taking a shot in that late first, and you're really hoping you don't get Keyshawn Vaughn.
Basically.
I mean, if you really need a running back, you kind of have to do it, but good God, I don't want to have to do it. So that's why he's like the clear 105. It's just simply, as much as I like Devontae Smith, and I like where Jalen Waddle landed too. And I like Rondale Moore right after that for the wide receivers. But like, all those guys, they kind of all kind of group together for me. I'm okay with getting any one of those. When you're looking at a running back, the only one I want left on the board, really, that I'm going to invest the 105 capital in, is Javonte Williams. So, yeah. I mean, that's why he's the clear 105 for me. It's just the difference.
Yeah,
it's bigger than the difference than Jamar Chase to the wide receiver too.
Oh yeah, I agree. There's just this massive chasm, and it seems like that was the pretty much consensus months ago that was the case. Even with the late surge of hype that Trey Sermon and even Ramondre Stevenson got with their insane finishes to their collegiate careers, it just seemed like there was this clear, hard break there. And so, yes, that is the fourth tier through five players. And then you have Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle in a tier of their own. Devontae Smith, sixth. Jalen Waddle, seventh. I found it interesting that it wasn't actually remotely close between the two. There was actually, Devontae Smith actually took down the sixth slot much easier than I thought he would, winning by 16% over his buddy Jalen Waddle. When, you know, Waddle was selected earlier in the draft, a lot of real draft NFL people like the burst of Waddle. Had Waddle been healthy last fall, there's no way Devontae Smith wins all those awards and does all those things. What do you guys think about those two? Because analytically speaking, Devontae Smith is the superior guy because he just has a larger sample. He's been the best wide receiver on Alabama for 3 years, basically, just production-wise. You can't even really argue it. And Jalen Waddle, we don't have a big sample, but the upside is electric. So where are you two on those two?
Go ahead, Matt.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
For me, it's flip a coin. I mean, honestly, I do have Devontae Smith ranked above Waddle. I would take Devontae Smith over Waddle every single time, but I don't really care if I miss on Devontae Smith and Waddle sitting there for me. It's not that big. There's not this tier break for me. I'm surprised that Devontae Smith won the poll so convincingly over Jalen Waddle, because I think they're really close. I think they're both going to be very similar point producers.
Yeah,
for fantasy football. I kind of like both situations, but neither situation is like, oh, that's perfect. So like, nothing really sets them apart from each other. So I coin flip for me. I don't really have a strong opinion on either of them over the other.
Sure. Matt, would you put either or like in their own tier away from each other?
No, I would keep them in the same tier, but I do have Waddle above. I don't know. I know we saw a relatively high volume passing from Jalen Hurts last season, but I don't think that's his strength. I don't think that's what they want him to do. He got put into a situation, you know, after Wentz had basically imploded, right? And they had a really bad defense, and he was kind of forced to throw that many times. And I'm not saying he's going to be a Lamar Jackson level passer in terms of the volume that he's going to get, but I have to think that they don't really want him to throw the ball 35, 40 times a game. I just don't think that's the offense that they necessarily want to see out of that particular quarterback. So, and you know, I still think Jalen Reagor is pretty good. Devontae Smith is absolutely the wide receiver one there, I'm sure, especially based on where they took him this year. But I don't feel good about that passing offense in general. Whereas Tua, you know, I know he probably showed even less than Hurts did in his limited time, but I feel better about that organization and the direction of where he's going. It seems like they want to build on top of speed, bring in a Will Fuller. Devontae Parker at this time is basically a replacement level receiver on the outside, right? So Preston Williams hopefully comes back, but every time he thinks he wants to break out, he just goes and dies, right? So yeah. I prefer the situation to Waddle, which I didn't think I was going to prefer heading in, because Waddle, out of those big five receivers in the pre-draft process, he was down at 4 or 5 for me pretty easily, but he's risen up to number 2. But no, I think they are in the same tier. They present similar risks. Both have second year quarterbacks, both have, you know, a little bit of a question in the depth chart, probably less so for Devontae Smith, I guess. But you know, and overall, I think they both present similar question marks. So in that case, I might as well take the superior athlete, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny, through these 7 guys in my real rookie drafts and my real auctions, everywhere I've seen, these 7 go before anyone else every time. It's Najee Harris, it's Ja'Marr Chase, it's Kyle Pitts, Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle. Not necessarily in that order, not necessarily exactly like that, but it's those 7, hard stop, and then anybody else, you know, you see some reaches and some disagreements here. But I still am actually seeing this next guy, Rashad Bateman, at the 8 slot here. He creates another tier of his own, winning his poll by 36%, taking the 8 slot here. Nobody even getting close to him somehow, because he is a first-round wide receiver. He had the stellar production profile. He looked like he tested at more athletic than many people, I think, thought he would. He came in a little bit skinnier, maybe, but still, like, he looked great, and then all of a sudden, oh, great, he's with the Ravens. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And that's why he kind of lives in this no man's land by himself, because we all want to like Rashad Bateman. And then I'm still like finding myself with none of him at this point in any of my leagues, because somebody else reaches on the upside of the production profile and forgets that the Ravens just passed for like 400 times last year. And if you look at, Greg Roman and his history of passing attempts, it's like he's never, his offenses have never hit 500 attempts in a season. Never. So like, even if he's like, oh yeah, we've got all these weapons now. Cool. Let's add, you know, like another 15% to our passing game. It still doesn't sniff 500 pass attempts for the Ravens. So I'm probably going to end up with 0 Rashad, and I hate it. Like, do you guys find yourself ranking him lower than the 8 slot in your own kind of ranks or process?
Yeah, it's really tough between him and Elijah Moore and Rondale Moore for me, because in the pre-draft process, Bateman was definitely the 2 for me. But you said it with the landing spot, and I mentioned it earlier. I'm not going to have a lot of them. I'm just not, because I'm going to take Rondale Moore, Elijah Moore over him probably almost every single time. And there's always going to be somebody else that will grab Bateman. But I mentioned AJ Brown before, and I know it's a different situation, a different offense, but you know, similar, a team that really wants to run the ball. And I missed out on a lot of AJ Brown because he was really high. I think he was 2 in my pre-draft ranks, and then once he hit that landing spot, I moved him down to like the end of the first round, like I think many people did, and I missed out pretty much altogether on AJ Brown. So that's a little bit of the FOMO that I have with Bateman. but it's just so hard to get over because, like you said, Roman doesn't take that next step with his passers. He's really good at getting these Russian quarterbacks to a spot where they're going to be productive, but he doesn't add that second, that next layer, you know? And yeah. Some people are saying, well, they can take a Josh Allen type bump, you know, like he can, the volume can come way up this year. It's so hard to bet on, you know? So even if he is the best of the best, even if he has, like, I think the second half of the season or maybe the last five or six games, whatever it was, Marquise Brown had like a 30% market share there, target share. And
which
in
is
that
off
offense.
The charts, by the way. It's a
yeah,
lot.
And but still, we didn't see, I know he's a different kind of player, but even with that amount, of target share, like we still didn't see, you know, astronomical numbers from Marquise Brown. And I think Bateman is going to provide
even average numbers.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Right. And for years now, 2 years now, I've wanted the Ravens to add kind of this like veteran receiver that's going to be reliable for Lamar Jackson, but that's going to be there. It's not just this, you know, this deep ball specialist or whatever you want to call it. And Bateman is kind of that guy. He's got that old man kind of veteran wide receiver game, right? So you can see the pieces working together, but it's just you can't fight volume. And that's what we know about fantasy football is you can't fight the low volume passing.
That's a problem. Well, moving on, we finally actually get a tier of like four players together. After Rashad, there's a little bit muddy. Like, no, not everybody agrees. Elijah Moore shows up here in the 9 slot, way higher than I thought he would. Then we get Trevor Lawrence, quarterback in round 1 of one quarterback leagues. That never happens, but he feels like an automatic slam dunk. So I know people want to go for the guy that looks like, you know, the next coming of the perfect quarterback prospect that we've been waiting on for 2 decades. You know, he is incredible, and I think he's going to live up to that billing, but it is a little bit much to take him 10th. And then you get your boy Rondale Moore, Matt, there for you. And then Terrace Marshall shows up here as well to round out round 1. Any surprises of this bunch for you, John?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this when you did it, that I'm not shocked that people took Trevor Lawrence here, but, oh, my God, it's a quarterback. Like, if you're going to take a quarterback, trade the pick if you can. Literally, like, do whatever you can. Maybe you can't. You're forced. I'm not taking a quarterback in this tier. And I know I sound like the person that bashes the people that say I'm not taking a tight end 101. I'm not taking a quarterback in round 1 of a single quarterback league. There's just – you lose so much in advantage. And, you know, even if you look back, well, what if you had taken Patrick Mahomes is the 110 – sure. Okay, fine. You find like this extreme outlier. Maybe Trevor Lawrence is that, but I don't think Trevor Lawrence is going to give me an advantage over 20 other quarterbacks that I could start on a given week. Like,
that's true. And one quarterback. It's funny though, because like in Superflex, Tube QB, it's you know, 1.01, obviously.
He's the clear 101.
Yeah, it's just a different game, but it is odd seeing a first round quarterback, even at the end of round 1. For sure. But for you,
I think it speaks to what we have coming up. And that's the reason that he's in there. Because once we get the end of this tier isn't all that appealing. And then we go even further down. And it's
And landing spot.
You're taking Trevor Lawrence because you're like, well, at least he's going to play for probably a lot of years. And exactly. I'm going to have him on my roster. Like,
That's what people do.
You think you're not wasting a pick. I'm pretty sure it's still a wasted pick. I'd rather take the risk.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious your thoughts, Matt. I think the only surprising player based on our conversations here for you might be Terrace Marshall in this tier. What are your thoughts on him? Because, I mean, I like the fact that he's with his college offensive coordinator. I like his touchdown percentage. It was bonkers. But is he in this tier for you?
I think he's, if he's not in this tier, he's in the next one for sure. I mean, I would prefer both of the wide receivers here. And I'm a little bit different on the quarterback. I'm totally fine taking Lawrence here. I'm totally fine taking, honestly, I'm totally fine taking any of the top three quarterbacks above, I guess, after the Rondale Moore level, because there's just so many question marks with these guys. But for Terrace Marshall specifically, I mean, I don't know. I mean, can he take Robbie Anderson's job year 1? Is Sam Darnold going to work out? I like the player. The situation seems good, but I don't know. There's still questions. There's more question marks with him than either of the other two receivers in this tier, in my opinion. That's why I'd be okay taking the quarterbacks. And then for the quarterbacks, you know, Lawrence is the 101 in Superflex. He's the safest if you want to go that way. And the reason why I say that that I don't mind taking him here is because in a one quarterback league, there are so few difference makers at the position. And let's say you're a championship team that just won the title last year, you've got to the finals, whatever, and you're rolling with an old quarterback, right? Why not take the luxury pick here of a quarterback that is going to, that there's no questions about, right? Like, why not just go ahead and lock down that position, stay overstating that it's going to be on your team for 10 years. That's a complete overstatement. Obviously we all trade players, but you know, why not take the last piece? If you're rolling out Ben Roethlisberger in a one quarterback league, might as well just go ahead and sew that up. So,
yeah. And that makes sense.
Because you won it with Ben Roethlisberger, your team's got to be stacked.
Yeah. But you might as well stack everything.
Yeah. But just stack up everything.
I get that argument, but yeah.
It's tough.
I don't know.
It's just this class too, because the landing spots, if you look at the next, like we normally have more running backs to get excited about. Just a year ago, we had way more running backs to get excited about. But in this next tier, after this, kicking off round two, it's Trey Sermon, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Michael Carter. Basically, the only two other running backs that have a truly stomachable projected role in year one. And then the two other quarterbacks that you just mentioned. And Matt, I mean, I'm fine taking it here. I think I have both Justin Fields and Trey Lance around this spot in my one quarterback rankings, which feels super weird, but it's also super gross after this point. And like there's a bunch of disagreement as to the ceiling and immediate role or capital questions or something with a bunch of these guys. And you mentioned already, John, like Trey Sermon is like the last guy you'd want to consider, maybe. And then maybe you make a Devontae Freeman argument for Michael Carter and that he's going to come in and maybe he has these size concerns, but he actually tested similarly to Freeman or whatever. And then he comes in and he's automatically the most talented back in an offense that wants to, you know, build a whole different team. You know, I get that. And so I get ranking the two running backs here together as well as the next two quarterbacks. This was the tier that actually ended up, in retrospect, making the most sense to me. But is there anybody that you guys would add to this tier that's not at this point between Trey Sermon, Justin Fields, Trey Lance, and Michael Carter?
Nope, it's a real clear tier. And this tier is the reason for the argument to take Trevor Lawrence. Because if you're not going to take Trevor Lawrence, you got to push him down. And who are you going to push up? And then you're taking Trey Sermon or you're taking Michael Carter as a first round running back. And I mean, we learned that lesson last year. Like when it's a reach, they both feel like a reach in the early second. They feel like an even bigger reach in the late first. I don't mind taking that gamble because I'd rather hit on a running back in a one quarterback league. But I know going into it, like I'm betting low. I'm betting
sounds
low
like
odds.
Matt almost got you. Matt almost convinced you.
No, it's close. I mean, I understand both sides of it. I'm gonna roll the dice and I'm gonna try and hit that low odds running back in the late first.
Yeah, man.
Think that the only reason the two running backs are here is because they are running
because
backs.
Because they're running backs. That's it.
Basically.
Yeah, I would argue that they have just as many question marks as, I mean, we talked about Tony already, but, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown is in the next tier is in a great situation. De'Ami Brown, I like as a player. And Amari Rodgers, if Aaron Rodgers coming back, you know, you can make an argument that all three of those guys are better picks than those two running backs. Carter is the most interesting, I think, but you know, Matt Waldman, it was Trey Sermon was his running back one pre-draft. So, I mean, he knows more about football in three sentences than I'll know in my entire life. So who am I to judge that? But that we know how Shanahan likes to use those running backs, right? So, and he's not the only one they brought in. Elijah Mitchell. They also brought in. They signed Wayne Gallman. We have this whole stupid rotation again. You have to think Mostert, who had the two fastest plays in the entire NFL last year. You have to think he's going to be involved. So it's just, you know, when are you going to start him? Like when are you going to start Trey Sermon unless he just completely eclipses all of the other ones and Shanahan decides I'm not going to rotate backs? Like that just seems like a bet that I'm not personally willing to make.
Yeah. And that's what's
I
weird.
Know it's a bad bet. I'm going into it knowing it's a bad bet.
Yep.
I'll take it.
Sticking to his guns.
I mean, you did nail it. They're there because they're running backs.
Yeah.
There's no other running backs on this list. Like, we get through the rest of the draft with no other running backs. Nope. And that's the reason that you have to take these guys, because if you don't take them, somebody else is going to, and then you just have zero shot.
Like, and it has to do, I mean, the rent.
You're betting on zero then.
Landing spots are just, they were gross for a lot of these guys. But on to the ninth tier here, believe it or not, picks 2.05 through the 2.09. Kadarius Toney, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Zach Wilson makes his debut, and Dyami Brown and Amari Rodgers. Five players round out this tier. Again, kind of a less dramatic tier break after Amari Rodgers. He only won his poll by 21%, but still did take 45% of the vote in the pick 21 overall there for Amari Rodgers. But like you mentioned, Matt, Amari Rodgers, like I didn't like him pre-draft. He never really peaked until his final season, although he was playing against some pretty tough competition. But gets the capital, is in a situation where he could be catching passes from Aaron Rodgers. That gets him into this tier for me. Dyami Brown, I think he could be the wide receiver too, not Curtis Samuel, for the Washington football team. I really love his deep game. And I mean, I've talked about it before, but he was basically the best deep threat in all of college football for two seasons in a row. Amon-Ra St. Brown has to compete with basically a bunch of practice squad wide receivers. And Kadarius Toney's just there because he's got first-round capital. So, again, kind of a self-explanatory tier here, but would you put anybody else in this tier of five if you had to?
I don't think so.
I wouldn't either.
I would kick the quarterback out, obviously, and just then these four are a pretty good wide receiver tier.
John hates quarterbacks. Cool. I would
agree with that just because it's Wilson. So
yeah. You know. Yeah. Well, moving on, we're just gonna wrap it up here. Nico Collins is a 2.10. Pat Freiermuth is 2.11. Dwayne Eskridge is kind of the beginning of the everyone else tier at pick 24 overall, the 2.12. You know, guys, I think after really Amari Rodgers, I really see things start to diverge incredibly. Like, I mean, you see guys reaching to make Chuba Hubbard the handcuff or whatever you want to call it, whatever the right verbiage now is, to back up Christian McCaffrey. You see guys reaching for the fifth quarterback in Mac Jones. You see guys still believing in the pre-draft status of Tylan Wallace, and even the other running backs that we liked before the draft, and Kenneth Gainwell and Ramondre Stevenson, and in situations where something's going to have to break for them to have any shot at any real role early on. And then, you know, guys taking shots on their favorite speedster, whether it's Tutu Atwell or Anthony Schwartz. Like, I've seen guys go like pick 25 all the way to like pick 45 once we get beyond this Amari Rodgers tier. Like, have you seen the same in some of your drafts?
The Tylan Wallace thing, it needs to stop. I mean, we just talked about how volume was going to be an issue for Rashad Bateman. It's not going to be an issue for Tylan Wallace. I mean, is he, I know they're different players, but I would see him in a similar role to Devin Duvernay, who is already there and has 1 year on him, who I liked probably, you know, just as much, if not as much as Tylan Wallace, and he's already established. So that's the real head scratcher for me. And then, yeah, Chuba Hubbard is a surefire way to get Christian McCaffrey back up to 99% usage, right, out of the backfield. So, I agree. After 209, just if you can get anything for your pick, take a third next year if you have to. Take two thirds, whatever it is. Take a backup one quarterback in a one quarterback league. But probably I'm going to get out if I have any picks after two of them.
Yeah, and it's so weird.
I've not seen a lot of trading out of the seconds out of this year. Actually, have you guys like in drafts? Like,
good luck.
I think everybody's like, all right, this draft's over. Let's just make our picks and be done.
Check out later. You know, I found myself targeting Tommy Trimble, which is funny because he's got a trash receiving profile, but he got the capital, probably has a role, could find his way into early snaps. I found him, and he's going well after pick 30 in all of my drafts. Tutu Atwell, a guy who has a 90th percentile adjusted production index. Again, weight questions, yes, but he got the capital. I'm seeing him like pick 40 plus. Like, and so guys just reaching for their favorite sixth round running back or their favorite undrafted free agent wide receiver over guys who legit got day two capital, and it happens every single year, and it is bad process. Like, I get it. Like, Javion Hawkins is in a fun situation. He's an undrafted free agent, had like the highest breakaway run percentage in college football last year, but he weighs like 17 pounds. Like, where are you guys at with him? Like, where are you seeing him go in your rookie drafts? Because I know he's like in the best undrafted free agent spot.
So I think Ryan tweeted out, he was like fourth round ADP most recently or something. And Ryan McDowell tweeted out, like, who in this fourth round are you taking a bunch? And I looked at the list and I'm like, oh my God, I think I've been ending up with JV and Hawkins. Like,
yeah,
because I'm in the fourth round and I'm looking at the options and I'm like, well, he's a running back on the Falcons. Like,
yeah.
You know
that spot that we wanted all of our favorite running backs to land in? Like, he's there. Yeah.
That feels like it's better than anything else that's left here. So I think he's the one that, I mean, in the fourth round, I've been throwing. It's a fourth round pick. Like, I don't expect anything from it. If he plays one game where I can get like a third round next year from it, I will cash out. So yeah, I think it's JV and Hawkins in that round, actually. I think you nailed it.
That's fair.
JV Hawkins, or, you know, this is obviously
you're going to go Homer pick, aren't you?
What?
Oh, I thought you were going to go Green Bay Homer pick.
Oh, no, but adjacent, I guess. Like Khalil Herbert, you know, I think he does have kind of a lead back profile, and he's just a hedge against Montgomery and Cohen, you know, because, you know, Montgomery had that incredible second half of the season, right? But I don't know. He's still kind of whatever. So, and then Cohen, I really like, and I think he's being underdrafted quite a bit this offseason. People kind of just forgot about him, that he's a great option out of the backfield as a receiver. But Khalil Herbert, I liked him. I liked him pre-draft, so I'm willing to take him in the fourth round. But I think Hawkins probably has the clearest path to any kind of production for sure.
Nice. I thought Matt was going to say Kylan Hill.
I do like Kylan Hill too, but
I've thrown him on rosters too. Like,
he's even more ball. And before we get stop with Atlanta, I mean, I'm still holding the pennant up for oh my gosh, my mind just went break.
Mike Davis,
Pitt, the one out of Pitt. It starts with an O.
Oh, you mean Qadree Ollison?
Yes, Qadree Ollison. I'm still holding the flag for Qadree Ollison to take over Mike Davis. Come on.
Oh, man.
I took him in the 28th round of the startup last.
All of our listeners are like, who? Who is that guy?
Qadree Ollison.
Yeah. One. All right. Well, you heard it first here, folks. If Ollison's a running back one, we all owe Matt a beer or something. I don't know. But anyway, I appreciate you guys coming on. This has been a lot of fun talking through these rookie values. And hopefully, listeners, you guys enjoyed this conversation talking about the tier breaks and where these rookies should go in drafts, where they have been going in our rookie drafts. And it was super helpful to you guys. We will get back into some college football content here very soon, since this is the College to Canton podcast. But this has been a bunch of fun. I still can't believe it's, you know, the NFL draft's already done for the year. It's just kind of weird. But anything else you guys want to plug before we sign off here?
It's almost Eliminator season, Travis.
Yes, it is.
It is almost
explain
Eliminator
that, because I mean, I know what you're talking about, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners aren't as plugged into our nerdy Twitter sphere as we are.
So for anybody that doesn't know, I run the Fantasy Cares Eliminators, which this year we're just going to do straight donations to play in leagues against people like Travis, against people like Matt. It's basically 17 people will be in the league. So a celebrity, heavily air quoted, you know, like Travis will be a celebrity of a league, and you can come on and you can play against Travis. And each week, the lowest scoring team gets eliminated. It's a simple best ball draft. I shouldn't say simple, because I kind of mess with the scoring and the positions and everything to make it interesting, we'll call it. Yeah. And it's fun. I mean, it raises a bunch of money for Fantasy Cares, which then goes to Scott Fish's Toys for Tots drive, and some to a local food bank called Go Pantry as well. So
awesome.
That's Love the it. Only thing I really have to promote.
Love Fantasy it, man.
Cares Eliminators coming up.
Love it. What about you, Matt?
I don't have anything to plug. You know, listen to Dynasty Game Night without John and I. We pretty much lost reins on that show. It's been taken over by Russet and Rocky Petrea at this point.
And,
so.
and they're doing awesome.
They're doing a great job.
But you guys, you know, you got it rolling. So it's a great idea. Lots of fun.
It's a community show.
It is fun.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely glad they've kept it going.
Yeah. Well, listeners, please leave a rate and review wherever you listen. I believe a question there. You can reach out to me again at @FF_TravisM on Twitter if you'd like. Tell me I'm wrong on all my rookie takes. That would be great. But until next time, I look forward to you guys joining me soon for many more episodes of the College to Canton podcast.